Hi again, this is Bob Brundage. Today is May the 3rd, 2012, and today I'm talking with Bob Riggs up in Centennial, Colorado. And we had an enjoyable session or two at the Colorado Convention in Nashville a month ago, and so looking forward to some great news about Bob and his activities in the Denver area. I do believe it is the Denver area, isn't it, Bob?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Is that where you're born and brought up?
No, I was born and raised outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in a town called originally Media, and then moved to Westchester and lived in the country up through my high school years.
I'll be darned. Westchester County, New York, you mean?
No, Westchester, Pennsylvania.
Westchester, Pennsylvania. Oh, okay.
And that's Chester County. Grew up with five brothers and sisters who today are spread around the world in various occupations, and none of them live in that area anymore.
I see. Well, so were you brought up in a musical family of any kind?
Yes, in that my mom and dad were very much into believing that raising kids involved music, it involved theater, it involved sports, it involved lots of exchanges, and all of us learned how to play an instrument or two. I had spent some time on the piano and some time in on a violin, neither of which I was very good at, but it did give me a background.
Right.
And gave me a few pieces that I can play, or should I say my fingers can play still today, in spite of the fact that...
Well, because were there any dancers in your family?
At the time, no. There was no dancing of any significance. The only dancing I remember in probably my high school years was we learned to do some Scottish country dancing. And I was actually remember that very fondly. I also remember my great aunt teaching me to waltz in the living room of a school.
There you go. Well, so how did you get introduced to square dancing?
Well, that one's a little bit of a story as well. I came to Colorado in the fall of 1970 to go to Colorado State University. And I attended that there and got a degree in computer science and really had no involvement with dancing because I was spending all of my time working and trying to get an education.
Yes.
In the summer of 1974, I graduated, and that same summer, a sequence of very peculiar events happened. I was living in a house that had a whole gob of guys living in it, and one day a lady came by, one of the girls was visiting somebody else, and she said, "The Haggy Heelofters is dancing on the plaza on Friday night. Why don't you come see it?"
I see.
And I don't remember her name, but I was looking for something different.
Yes.
At the time, and I went over and I sat on the wall surrounding the plaza, and I watched that whole night very intently at people having a good time square dancing. And I didn't dance that night, but I did promise that I would come back the following week, and they made me promise that I would try to dance that following week. That same first night, just as a side note here, a young lady rode up on a bicycle in a square dance dress with a petticoat on, with a short haircut, sort of pretty looking, and I didn't think much of it at the time. But that same night was the first night I saw my wife.
I'll be darned.
So as I say, it's a strange sequence of events. I went back the next week. I danced. And that's 38 years ago.
Okay. And so you wound up marrying your lovely wife?
We were married in 1978.
Uh-huh.
So 4 years later, both of us went off and had relationships with other people, and somewhere along the line we discovered we liked each other.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's always a help.
And she was the daughter of a caller.
I see.
In Fort Collins by the name of Ray Boyd, who had been calling since the late 40s.
Uh-huh.
And had called for the CSU Aggie Helicopters when they had participated in the competitions in Texas in either 1947 or 48, somewhere in there.
Yes.
So he was part of that time period when there were actually competitions of the figures in the late 40s. But anyway, she knew what she was getting into when she married me.
Uh-huh. So, then, you joined his square dance club, is that it?
Well, we both danced with the Aggie Helicopters, which was the college club.
I see.
His club was the Square Dusters, and we danced there periodically, but we really didn't join because we were part of the college group.
Yes.
And we danced with them until we were married in 78, and then in 79 we ended up moving to State College, Pennsylvania.
Oh.
For job reasons.
Yes.
And in State College, we danced with the Center Squares, which is a long-standing club who was run by Carter and Ruby Ackerman.
Uh-huh.
And they're still at it today. I just had some dialogue with them while we were at Caller Lab.
Uh-huh.
During that period, the 4 years we were there, we taught a couple of square dance classes. We taught a round dance class. And did a little bit of calling.
I see.
But it was still sort of the formative years where I was trying to figure out what I really wanted to do and still learning the craft.
I see.
In 1983, we had come to the conclusion that having had one child, that we wanted to come back to Colorado to raise our kids here. And that's what brought us from Pennsylvania back to Colorado.
Yes. And so how did you get started in dancing there and calling and so forth?
Well, we were fairly involved in a variety of activities, and then originally we went out dancing, and one of the places we went dancing was the club in Castle Rock. And about that time, the club that had started in 1978, and had a gentleman by the name of Al Runyon, who was their caller. Al was a good local caller, but the club wanted to move beyond his skills.
I see.
And so in the summer of 1984, they went on a search for a new club caller, of which I was one of the candidates, and through a process that was a little unusual, in October, I actually became the club caller for Sunflower Squares in Castle Rock.
I see, okay.
And I started teaching, and in that teaching, I learned a lot, a tremendous amount about calling.
Yes.
And that club is, what I would say has been the core of my ability to move from being a beginning caller to being an experienced caller.
Right. So, outside of the men that you, people that you've mentioned, who were any of your other mentors?
Well, when I started calling, that which was in 1975 at CSU, urged on by the members of the club there at the Aggie Helofters, during the 75 to 76 time period, I basically called with only the skills that they provide. In the summer of 1966, I attended the caller school, or 1976, I attended the caller school at the Dance Ranch in Estes Park, put on by Frank Lane, Von Parrish, and Earl Johnston.
Uh-huh.
And that was a significant turn of events, again, in my calling career.
Right.
Because I went in there as a card reader, pre-choreographed kind of reading whatever choreography I was calling, trying to understand it.
Yes.
And came out with a set of skills that they taught in that week that took me about 6 months before I really understood what they were talking about. Even a couple of years before I would say I mastered most of what they tried to teach me.
I see. Okay. Well.
And I will say that there were some other mentors that were significant in my my time. Herb Eggender.
Yes.
And his first wife, Erna,
uh-huh,
were significant influences on both Alan and I.
Yeah.
Both in the round dance world and in the square dance world.
Yes.
In the early 80s as well.
Right. So, you must have attended several festivals and so forth.
Yes, we've attended many state festivals and many nationals.
Good.
My first national was in Birmingham, probably in the late 80s.
Huh?
And since then I have attended not every one, but many of them.
Yeah. So then you got involved with Caller Lab?
In 1984, I became a member of the Denver Area Callers and Cures Association, and the same year, Herb Eggender sponsored me to be a member of Caller Lab.
I see. Great. So, all right. Well, that kind of solidifies your background a little bit. So, I believe the first time I met you was here in Albuquerque at the Lodge Dance Archives, and I was wondering, had you had any affiliation with the Lloyd Shaw Foundation?
Well, my original affiliation with the Lloyd Shaw Foundation occurred in 1989. Dina Fresh had just been notified that she could no longer go to the altitude of Fraser, Colorado, and attend the Rocky Mountain Dance Roundup.
I see.
And because she couldn't go to altitude, she had been long time been the one that had been teaching the rounds at the dance week.
I see.
And so that year, Cal Campbell invited Alan and I to come up and help them teach the round dance program.
Oh, yes.
For the dance week.
Uh-huh.
I told him right off, I said, I know I have taught round dance classes, but I'm pretty much convinced that I'm a square dance caller who cues.
Right.
And he said, well, I still want you to come up here because you have the right understanding and the right philosophy.
Right.
Which is what we're talking about here. And so we went. And in those days, the dance week was directed by Diane Ortner. And Don Armstrong was in attendance, and Bill Lichman was in attendance, and many of those people provided significant influence from that point forward.
Yes.
Alan and I became the directors of the Rocky Mountain Dance Roundup, and I don't remember the year. Diane did it for 10 years, and then we did it for 11 or 12. And we still are the directors of a sort of a new two-day event called the Shaw Folk Rendezvous.
I see.
Which we've held the last, this year will be the third year.
Right. Well, with Don Armstrong there, was that your first introduction to the contra dance area?
I'd had a little exposure to it because Herb Agendur had done a few.
Oh, yes.
In some dance, in some arena. But as far as the beginning to understand it in its, in all of its, both complexity and beauty, I think that's probably where we would begin to say we began to know it for what it really is rather than what its reputation was.
Right, right. So, well, getting back to your Denver area there, I understand that you have quite a great dance performance group.
Today, I am co-directors with Cal and Judy Campbell of the Colorado Dancers.
I see.
The Colorado Dancers is a older adult group. I shouldn't say older, it is an adult group.
Yes.
The dances, I think we currently have about 40 dances in our repertoire that we perform. That range from long ways dances from the late 1600s to contemporary square and contemporary contra dances, and include round dances, and our latest little thing is a set of performance dances that are focused around five people or five couples.
Yes.
And so some of the other formation dances that we perform. So we're trying to tell a history of dance from dances like Hole in the Wall, which is 1695,
yeah,
up through contra dances like Sackett's Harbor and Hall's Victory, and some English country dancing. We're doing a little piece on Shrewsbury Lasses,
right,
which is an English dance. And so significant variety in dance, showing both its diversity and its similarity throughout the history.
Yes. Well, do you get a chance to perform very much?
Well, we don't perform as much as we'd like. We are going to be performing this year at the National Square Dance Convention in Spokane.
Oh, that's great.
We have performed at both the Colorado State Festival and at national conventions, and periodically at nursing care facilities and senior living communities and other places in the Colorado area.
Yes. Well, did you, I guess you were a little after of the Lloyd Shaw Cheyenne Mountain Dancers.
Yes.
Actually. But,
yes, I am quite a bit after. During the early 2000s, I was affiliated with a group called the Rocky Mountain Dancers.
Oh, yes.
And the Rocky Mountain Dancers, I was co-director with Peggy Pingle of that group. And that group was a teenage/young adult group that attempted in some respects to emulate the dancing of the Cheyenne Mountain Dancers to show what some of it might have looked like.
Yes. Well, I guess that's the group I was thinking about. But not affiliated with them now, is that it?
Loosely. Peggy, they went dormant for about 3 years, and my understanding is that they have found enough young people that they are back to dancing again.
Oh, that's great.
So I have not seen them. I know some of the young people that are involved in it, but I have not. I'm too busy at the moment to go and spend much time with them, but probably sooner or later will.
Yes, right. Are you familiar with the Silver Spurs from Spokane, Washington?
Yes, I am.
I had the chance to sponsor them probably three or four times back east, and they were a group similar to the Lloyd Shaw Cheyenne Mountain Dancers, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably never got to meet Red Henderson. He was their leader.
No, I did not.
Yeah. Well, Red Henderson, he was their leader.
No, I did not.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm glad that that type of activity is going on around the country, and I'm sure you're making a sizable contribution to the effort. So, well, let's get down to the meat of this program. And I'm interested in the country dance program, community dance program, at Caller Lab. So, why don't you give us the scoop on CDP, as it's called?
Well, it's now almost 15 years ago that there was this concept identified of a community dance program, which in today's terminology could be thought of as a limited basic program with the addition of dancing in a variety of formation to provide entertainment value versus adding more square dance terms.
Right.
And the community dance program, as it was originally put together, was 24 basics. Danced in squares, contra lines, Sicilian circles, and a variety of other things that you can do to have fun with people.
Yes.
That, in that time period, we have tried a variety of formats from probably the original one we did, which was about 15 years ago locally here. There was a group that we'd done some one-night parties for that had said, you know, we'd like to do this more regularly.
Uh-huh.
And it was a church group, and so we said, okay, if we can use the church, we'd be more than happy to meet twice a month and see what we could do. And that went on for, we built a solid program that probably had at most four squares. And over the course of a 3 or 4 year period, it began to dwindle. And at the end of about 4 years, it died a death of lack of attendance.
Right.
But we learned a lot out of it. We learned that what we were trying to do with dances that, dance events that could be conducted with both a returning audience that returned either every 2 weeks or at least once a month, along with new people coming in every time,
yes,
was possible as long as you could continuously create a recruiting pattern.
Right.
That would bring the new people in. We also discovered that there were some dance forms that were more suited to the environment than others. And so we began to see that what you could really present in an evening and what would be considered entertainment by that kind of an audience. about 12 years ago, Cal Campbell enlisted my assistance, and we started putting on the Beginner Dance Party Leader Seminar before the conventions, before the Caller Lab convention. That was an opportunity that was sort of twofold. One, it gave us a chance to show some of the concepts that we were talking about when we talked about community dance and community dance programs. But it also gave us the opportunity to enlist the knowledge of others from the organization who were doing like things.
Right.
And that has had a significant impact on the content and form and the evolution of community dancing. As I look at it around the country, various callers are doing different kinds of things, and they're making things work for their arena.
Well, I understand you have a newsletter for the community dance program, don't you?
Yeah, the part of the one of the committees of Caller Lab is the Committee for Community and Traditional Dance.
I see.
And that committee is the one that sponsors the Beginner Dance Party Leadership Seminar today. It is that committee that also publishes the Community Dance Journal, or the CD Journal.
I see.
And that journal contains all sorts of material and concepts and programming techniques and all sorts of things. It's usually either a two-pager or a four-pager, depending upon how much content we can get, that's published, we hope, four times a year, when we can get the content and get appropriate things going.
Right. So, how many subscribers do you have for that?
I am unsure because it is managed through the home office, and it is now done electronically. But I think it's above 60.
Okay. Well, at your session at Nashville this year, you had a good turnout there of people interested in the program. I thought you must have had at least 50 or so there in attendance at every session, didn't you?
For the seminar, there were 27 registered, and then there were partners.
Yeah.
And then there were some part-time look-ins.
Yes.
And which we always have. In Las Vegas in 2011, we had 45 people.
Yes.
So we've had some really great turnouts the last couple of years, and I felt very good about the content and the exchange of ideas that is going on there.
Right. So, but this program really was started by Cal Campbell, is that it?
I would say that he is the sort of the that's where the original list came from, was some work that he did, and it was focused around some work that Bob Howell and Cal and Ken Kernan did.
Oh, yes.
Leading up to the publishing of the book that the three of them authored.
Right.
Called Dancing for Busy People.
Yes.
And so the list came first, and I think Bob Howell and Cal were sort of the prime motivators of that, because Ken was already partially retired.
Yes. And
but he did contribute to the overall ideas and many of the dances that are in the book, and I think many of the concepts that make up the community dance program came from those three gentlemen.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a great book, there's no doubt about it. I hope people will pick up a copy sometime if they haven't seen it. It's called Dancing for Busy People. And so what's your estimate of the future of the CDP program? You seem to be growing, or?
I think that in our world today, we need a variety of dance products.
Right.
And I have a community dance program that I do twice a month for a senior living community. And it is that form of a limited basic with a variety of formations is exactly what they need.
Yes.
I have also seen community dance environments where there's the monthly dance and the monthly potluck and dance.
Yes.
That kind of an environment occurs around the country periodically.
Good.
I actually believe that if callers would take the initiative, that there would be more of those.
Yes.
I think we, and I'm going to be a little outspoken here, I think callers need to think about the profession we're in, and the profession we're in is that of an entertainer and an organizer. And I can go out and organize a dance event. I don't need to wait for a club to do it and a club to hire me to call.
Yes.
I think I need to be out there creating dance opportunities in our world.
Yes.
And there's significant opportunity to go out there and create a dance that people can come to and just have a good time with the fellowship of the people they know or the people they get to know.
Yes.
So overall, I look at the dance spectrum, and I see the community dance program as being one of the products of the overall program.
Right.
Along with the one-night party being sort of the beginning entry level, the non-repetitive version of it, and then moving to the community dance, which is simply that. Dance that can be held infrequently with limited number of basics and a limited amount of knowledge.
Right.
And then moving on into the recreational dance world, the people who dance frequently.
Right. Well, do you have any predictions for the future of the club style dancing as we see it around the country today with all those different levels and all the way up to challenge and so forth?
I actually see that as long as we provide a diversity in the programs and that we don't limit ourselves to only one, that we can create a healthy community.
Right.
The statement I made at Caller Lab during the closing session, I'm a very strong proponent of that statement. The statement is we have to first have enthusiasm. Enthusiasm about our activity and the people we affect by our activity. We have to understand that not everyone is going to dance every day.
Right.
That not everyone is going to dance every week.
Right.
That not everyone is going to dance once a month. That there's groups of people who are going to dance however it fits into their life. And I think if I was to say, I'm trying to say something of wisdom, I would say every person in the world must find where dance fits in their life.
Right.
And the fact that it fits in my life every day is just me. I can't expect everyone to do that. And what that means to me is that there are people out there that need to dance 20 basics. There are people out there that need to dance the recreational program called mainstream.
Right.
There are people out there that need to dance plus. There are people out there that enjoy pushing plus to full by definition. And there are people who want to dance more terms than that, and they proceed onward into the advanced and challenged world.
Right.
The number of people that are in each of these worlds will be different based upon their need for dance in their lives. I don't call Beyond Plus. I don't have time to do that, advanced and challenge, and to entertain the thousands of people I entertain every year at one-night parties.
Yes.
So I have chosen to be as good at doing one-night parties as I can and at community dances and at mainstream dances and at plus dances, and that's the level of my ability to contain the skills necessary to deliver each of those programs.
Right. Well, that's interesting. It's certainly a great philosophy, Bob. And I know you're good at what you say. So.
Well, just as a note there.
Yes.
Every place that I hear people talking about the death of square dancing, they have forced square dancing to a certain level of commitment. And that's the only thing available in those areas.
Yes.
So if I go look and I say, okay, in XX City, their square dancing is dying, and I look at it and I go, okay, all you can dance there is plus.
Yes.
Well, of course it's dying. If you provided some things we have here in Denver, we have a Tuesday night dance that dances just slightly above basic. And they get 5 to 8 squares every week.
Yes.
Well, and we have a dance that's held twice a month that's at the dance by definition level of plus. And they get 3 to 4 squares.
Right.
So what does that say? It says that we have different people in different halls at different times.
Right.
All being entertained by this wonderful activity called square dancing.
Right. So, well, that's very interesting. I've been asking a lot of the people I've interviewed, over your career, is there anything you wish you had changed in your coming up days and any regrets?
Oh, I would probably, if I'm being honest, I would probably say, like most callers, that somewhere between 5 and 10 years, I was probably too cocky. Because I think every caller that I encounter that's a new caller sort of exhibits the same set of characteristics. And being slightly more humble and discovering how much we don't know, because no matter how long I do this, I discover how little I know.
Right. Well, that's interesting. So, do you have any other hobbies, Bob?
Not particularly. I would have to say I'm a little single focused here, and I've actually thought about that when it comes to retirement. Where's my woodworking or my other kinds of things?
Right.
I have done some woodworking, but not to the point where I would call it a hobby at the moment.
Yeah.
When I was young, I flew airplanes and called that a hobby.
Uh-huh.
And flew gliders and so on, but I have been so dedicated to the square dance activity that at the moment I don't have time for other hobbies.
Right, right. You're still working, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So, well, this has been an interesting conversation, Bob. Is there anything else you can think of that you'd like to add for the tape?
Well, I would say that one of the things that all of us as callers have to realize is the breadth of knowledge of the people we come in contact with. I didn't mention in the course of the dialogue about the Lloyd Shaw Foundation that I have met and spent time with Enid and Lou Koch, that I've spent time with many other, shall we say, people who either directly participated in the Lloyd Shaw world or who are children of people who participated in the Lloyd Shaw world.
Yes.
And the fellowship has had a long reach, and part of me wishes that I could better understand what charisma Lloyd Shaw had, so that we could figure out a way to spread the knowledge and the philosophy that he was trying to spread
right.
in today's world.
Right.
I don't seem to be able to understand it well enough or can't modernize it into the contemporary to figure out how to do some of the things that he was trying to do.
Right.
But the Lloyd Shaw Foundation has had a significant impact. Both myself and my wife have been on the board of directors as well as directors of the camps.
Yes.
And both of us are recipients of the Silver Boot Award.
Oh, great.
So we were honored by that probably 10 years ago. And
good. That's wonderful.
It's a real meaningful award.
Right. So, well, Bob, I think we've kind of wound down here, unless you can think of anything else.
I think that's good enough for this decade.
Well, keep up the good work, as they say. And so I think we'll call this the end of the tape, and I'd appreciate it if you'd stay on the line after we stop. And I'll see you again at Caller Lab, hopefully, one of these.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. So hold on.